first reading is from 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. So I made up my mind not to make you another painful visit. For if I cause you pain, who is there to make me glad but the one whom I have pained? And I write as I did, that when I came, I might not suffer pain from those who should have made me rejoice. For I am confident about all of you, that my joy would be the joy of all of you. For I wrote you out of much distress and anguish of heart, and with many tears, not to cause you pain, but to let you know the abundant love that I have for you. But if anyone has caused pain, he has caused it not to me, but to some extent, not to exaggerate it, to all of you. This punishment by the majority is enough for such a person. So now, instead, you should forgive and counsel him, that he may not be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. So I urge you to reaffirm your love for him. I wrote for this reason, to test and to know whether you are obedient in everything. Anyone whom you forgive, I also forgive. What I have forgiven, if I have forgiven anything, has been for your sake in the presence of Christ. The word of the Lord.
Our second week. Can you hear me?
Oh, that hurts. In this, our second week in a series on 2 Corinthians, we hear the Apostle Paul writing this letter to the congregation in Corinth, a congregation that has had a lot of division and a lot of struggle within the community and with Paul himself. There were so many hurt feelings that Paul decided not to visit, but to send a letter instead. How often is it that we hear of this kind of fracture in a congregation or in a family? Most of us have experienced something along those lines in our lives. It can leave a family disillusioned and broken. Truth be told, none of us will escape this life without experiencing some kind of conflict like that. Something that leaves a bruise, a gash, a hurt on our bodies, our minds, or our lives. That kind of hurt stings, and it stays with us, just like arthritic joints might still ache when the thunderstorms come rolling through. That's the kind of pain that the Apostle Paul talks about today. Now, before I get into my message, I want each of you to hold out your hands like this. Hold out your hands. Do you have a hurt in your life, a pain? Something you've been carrying around for an hour, a day, a week, or a month, or maybe your whole lifetime? Feel the weight of that. Is it heavy? Sometimes we don't even know we're holding on to something until we let it go. So just keep that sensation in your mind of the weight that we carry with us. I don't know about you, but sometimes I don't even realize I'm holding on to old stuff until I let it go. I give it up to God, and then suddenly I feel light and free. In this series on 2 Corinthians, last week I talked about a story that comes from the Talmud. In this story, a man asks a rabbi, how will I know who the Messiah is? How will I recognize the Messiah? And he said, well, the Messiah is already here. The Messiah is sitting at the gates of the city, covered in wounds. And the man said, well, how will I know which one he is? And he said, well, everyone else unbandages all their wounds at the same time and then bandages them all up again. But the Messiah unbandages one at a time and tends to that wound and then bandages it up again. In that way, the Messiah is ready to help anyone at any time because the Messiah has already tended to his wounds. You know, I think forgiveness is a lot like that too. When we forgive, it is a gift to ourselves first, and then it is a gift to the other. Forgiveness is a gift that sometimes we have a hard time getting to, though. Getting to the words, I forgive you, can be hard because it's a process. Some people view it as a one-time event, but it truly is a process that we begin, and we make a conscious decision to begin again and again. It's a process that starts with humility and vulnerability, and it begins by acknowledging the hurt and then letting it go. Now let's get a few things straight about forgiveness. Forgiveness is not about enabling others to make poor choices or to continue with destructive behaviors or abusive behaviors. Forgiveness is about not allowing the hurt to have power over our lives, to hold us hostage, and to define who we are. Forgiveness is about not letting those wounds define us. Forgiveness allows us to be no longer defined by our history, by our pain, because Christ sets us free from that. So forgiveness is a gift to ourselves and to the other person that we forgive. One of the most common questions that I get about forgiveness is someone says, "Pastor, I thought I had forgiven someone, but that memory of whatever happened keeps coming back to me again and again. Does this mean that I've really forgiven?" It's a pretty common question. Well, first I want to dispel the myth that forgiving requires forgetting. We sometimes are told that, you know, we need to forgive and forget. But we have human brains that we store things in our long-term memories, right? It's sometimes a way for us to protect ourselves from future hurt. So it's natural, of course, that we would remember those things from time to time. So how then are we to know when we truly do forgive someone? Well, when we forgive someone, remembering the hurt does not have power over our lives. When we forgive, remembering does not bring up bitterness toward the other person. And when we truly forgive, we do not keep bringing it up again and again in an argument like a weapon. It's so easy to do that. But that requires some discipline. And that requires us to see the other with the light of Christ within them. Forgiveness takes hard work. Am I right? Have you all done this work? It's hard work. It's not as simple as we make it out to be. Now today we're going to pray a different version of the Lord's Prayer. And I know many of you, like me, have memorized the Lord's Prayer, and so it kind of rolls off the tongue, and it's become a staple for me in my prayer life. If I don't know what to pray for or who to pray for, I pray the Lord's Prayer, and it seems to encompass everything that I want to say. But because we have it memorized, sometimes we don't think about the actual meaning of those words. So today, we're going to have a different version. And in this version, it says, "Let forgiveness flow like a river between us." Can you imagine that? A river flowing between us freely. This image of the flowing river is really close to the original meaning of forgiveness. The Greek word here that Paul uses is charizomai, which means to give freely. It's the same word that Paul uses when he asks people to give to the poor. Can you imagine giving freely of forgiveness in that way? It's amazing to think of it that way. But it's not quite that easy, is it? But we need to remember that if we are able to forgive at all, it is not through our own power or our own strength. It is only because Christ lives within us that we are even able to forgive at all. Now this week, when I was thinking about this topic, I was searching for stories of forgiveness, and I found a website called The Forgiveness Project, where people from all across the world have posted their stories about how they have experienced tremendous hurts in their lives and how they have started on the path toward forgiveness. These stories are not sugar-coated. They are not a simple formula to forgiving someone in three easy steps. These stories are real. And I posted this link to the Facebook page today, so if you want to go home and read more, you can read about all these amazing stories. Today I'm going to share just one of them with you. This comes from Victoria Rubolo, who is from New York. And here's her story. On a cold night in November 2004, six teenagers in New York bought a 20-pound turkey with a stolen credit card. While driving along on the highway, 18-year-old Ryan Cushing threw the frozen bird out the window, and the turkey collided with Victoria's car. It smashed through the windshield, and she was taken to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. She awoke several weeks later to find out what happened to her. Victoria said, "When I looked in the mirror, I could see it was me, but my whole face was smashed in. Every bone in my face was broken. I had no idea I'd had 10 hours of surgery, and I was shocked when doctors told me that I had, from now on, for the rest of my life, I had titanium plates in my cheeks, and I had a wire mesh holding my left eye together. Once I got off the medication, I remember lying in the bedroom at my sister's house and crying myself to sleep and asking, 'Why me, God?' Then the district attorney informed me that the other teenagers who had been with Ryan that night had entered a plea bargain against him. This, with all the other evidence, Ryan was expected to be put in jail for 25 years. It was then that I started asking questions about Ryan. I wanted to know what kind of kid he had been. Had he always been a bully? Was he always hurting other people? How could he have possibly been so angry that he would throw something out of a car window and hurt someone like me?" She asked all these questions and then realized she did not want Ryan to rot in jail. Victoria said, "That's when I asked to meet with Ryan's lawyer and asked for a different kind of a sentence, a lesser sentence. So on the day we went to court, I saw this young man walk in wearing a suit which looked three times too big for him. It made him seem so frail. He walked in with his head hung low, and he looked so upset with himself. When I saw him there, my heart went out to him. To me, he looked like a lost soul. Once the case was over and it was time for him to walk out, he started veering over towards me," she writes, "and that every court officer jumped. They were ready to pounce on him to make sure he didn't hurt her. They had no idea why he was coming over to see her." And she said she looked up at him and saw that he was crying profusely. And he looked at her and said, "I never meant for this to happen. I prayed for you every day. I'm so glad you're doing well." And then this motherly instinct came over me, Victoria writes, and all she could do was cuddle him like a mother and tell him, "Just do something good with your life, will you? Take this experience and do something good." Victoria said, "Because I asked for amnesty for Ryan, he received a 6-month prison sentence with 5 years probation, community service, and psychiatric help." She writes, "Some people couldn't understand why I'd done this, but I felt God had given me a second chance, and I wanted to pass it on. I know I did the right thing," she writes. "Kids like Ryan don't think about what they do. They think they're invincible and everything will be okay. They don't think about how every action has a reaction." It's an amazing story, isn't it? The website has several like this from all across the world. And then I thought about one of my favorite forgiveness stories from the Gospel of John. The one where a woman is confronted by a crowd. In that story, Jesus is at the Mount of Olives, and the next morning he goes to the temple. And a crowd gathered, and they said to Jesus that they had found a woman who was caught in the act of adultery. So they put her in front of the crowd. Do you remember this story? And they said to Jesus, "This woman was caught in the act of adultery, and the law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say?" And Jesus said, "Okay, but let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone." One by one, the accusers went away. They left one by one. And then Jesus said to the woman, "Where are your accusers? Didn't even one condemn you?" "No, Lord," she says. And Jesus says, "Neither do I. Go and sin no more." So here Jesus shows us just how exposed this woman was. With no one to advocate for her, she surely would have died. Well, the man that she was found with was not accused at all. The self-righteousness of the crowd would have led to the woman's death. And then Jesus did the unthinkable. He highlighted their shared humanity, the crowd's and the woman's. Jesus pointed to the truth that we are all broken to some degree. We all fall short. Suddenly, the prostitute becomes a real person, a child of God who Jesus shows mercy and compassion. Walking in the way of Jesus, we too are asked to see through this lens, to see the humanity within each person, to see the Christ-like quality in everyone, and to respond in kind. With all these stories of forgiveness, I don't want to paint a picture that forgiveness is a slam dunk, that it's easy. But like I said earlier, it is only because Christ lives within us that we are able to forgive. Christ gives us that power to forgive. All on our own, we would hold grudges. Without Christ, we would ruminate over things. Large and small wounds would take up residence in our bodies and our minds. Without Christ, we would continue to injure ourselves and the world with bitterness and regret and hatred and retribution. But by the power of Jesus, we can give this gift of forgiveness to one another and at the same time free ourselves of bitterness. When Christ is within us, every wound can be healed. Sure, we may bear the scars of those old wounds. We may have memories of those wounds. But by the power of God, these wounds will no longer have control over our lives, and we can be set free. Now, earlier, I asked you to hold in your hands, you know, the weight of a hurt that you're holding. Do you remember what that feels like? Is it heavy? Well, I invite you to come to the font where we first receive our identity as children of God. And each of you, I invite you to come to the font and put your hands in the water and feel the water slip through your fingers. That is the forgiveness that we receive from God. And it's available to us each and every day. So today, when you come forward for communion, I invite you first to step to the font and put your hands in and to remember that you've received an amazing gift from God. Amen. Thank you.